You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm really pleased to have with me once again Jeff Clark. He's an accomplished analyst, author, and speaker, and he is a globally recognized authority in the precious metals. And his father was an award-winning gold panner, for goodness sake. So I guess he really is. If Jeff is a gold bug, I guess there's good reason for it. And his family owned mining claims in California, Arizona, Nevada. So, goodness, I mean, I grew up in Ohio, the Buckeye State, and never got close to an ounce of gold until I started writing my own newsletter and traveling to places like California, Arizona, and Nevada. So, Jeff, thanks for joining me again. It's really good to have you with me.
It's great to be back with you again, Jay. And my father, unfortunately, is up in years now and did have to give up many of those claims, but lots of good stories that we could go into someday about being out there and looking for gold and finding gold. So it was a lot of fun.
It would be a lot of fun to hear them. And you're also very involved. I think you're a speaker at the Cambridge House at Sprott Resources events and so forth, Silver Summit. How can people catch up with you? And because you write a lot of very interesting articles, which is why you're on this show today. I want to ask you about one of them. But how can people keep up with what you're with your work, Jeff?
It's pretty simple. Just go to goldsilver.com and you'll see the various tabs up there for, you know, news and blog and things like that. And mm-hmm. my stuff usually shows up in both of those tabs. Usually have at least one educational or informational article per month. You know, we try to do analysis with it, make it educational as opposed to just, you know, reporting the news, which is
sure
what I did with that article that you and I are going to talk about. But that's mm-hmm. the main portal to find everything. It's pretty simple.
All right, and you mentioned that you mentioned that Mike Maloney, who's been a guest on this show on a couple of occasions, that he has just done a new video. Is that right? And you're saying the biggest presentation he's done yet? He puts on some pretty informational, very very informational videos that I've seen in the past. Tell us about this one.
This is Mike's, and I mentioned it to you deliberately because it is Mike's biggest economic update in many years. He was hunkered down for several months with him and his team and doing research and all kinds of things. And it is a 3+ hour presentation on wow. his biggest economic update. It's called the Early Warning, Mike Maloney's Early Warning Report. Mm-hmm. It is a video. It's very well done. I've seen it. And the timing is excellent. It just came out today.
Okay.
It covers stocks, bonds, cryptos, real estate, the U.S. dollar, and, of course, gold and silver. And mm-hmm. there's just a plethora of information in this video. It's very, very much worth your time. There is a small cost to it because of the amount of time and effort and expense that went into producing it. Mm-hmm. But it is well worth someone's time and investment. It's quite a project. So I encourage people, and that's right on our website as well, goldsilver.com, and you'll see it right there in the banner at the very top, his early warning report. So very worth checking out.
Okay, well, we'll have to do that. So what caught my eye, and the reason I wanted to have you on today, was an article titled, "The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming." And at the start of that article, you refer to a humorous movie you saw some time ago titled "The Russians Are Coming." Talk to us about that movie and why the idea of the Russians coming might not be such a humorous thing after all. But first of all, tell us about the movie, the plot.
The movie is great. I loved it. I saw it as a kid. It was made in the 1960s, and it's a fun little story about a Russian submarine that accidentally runs aground off the New England coast. This is during the Cold War, of course, and so the local residents see a Russian submarine and Russians coming ashore and panic and think they're being invaded. So there's a lot of funny antics that go along with it. So it's worth checking out if you need a movie for a Saturday night. But, you know, it's really not a laughing matter what's really happening today with what Russia is doing, or at least their central bank. And that is the big news, and I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of it before, but in April, which was just reported last month, they dumped literally half of their treasury holdings out of their central bank reserves. It was a phenomenal extreme action that we just haven't seen before. To dump that, if you look at a chart, and many of these journalistic reports didn't even put a chart to it. That's the first thing I thought to do. And if you look at the chart in the article, you'll see, oh, there's a, you know, they have about 100 billion, there's 90 billion, there's 95 billion, then all of a sudden it goes down to 48 billion in 1 month. So them dumping that much in treasuries is quite significant. And I thought, well, maybe that's just a one-off. Maybe that's just one, you know, a one-time thing that they're going to do. And we don't have May data yet. I looked before it came on the air with you, and the May data from them is not out. They tend to be, like the Chinese. They don't, a little coy about when they report and that sort of thing. So it'll be very interesting to see what happened in May. But the point is, this is actually part of a bigger trend. Since 2011, Russia has been dumping treasuries regularly. They had over 150 billion in U.S. treasuries in 2011. Today they have 48. So they have slashed in the past 7 years by two-thirds their treasury securities and their reserves. So they're, you know, this big drop was significant, but it's actually part of a bigger trend that Russia is doing in getting rid of treasuries.
I think it's interesting that we hear a lot on the media these days about how evil Russia is and how much of a danger they are to us. They're hacking our computer systems, supposedly. They're hacking the DNC, and they're out there to help Trump get elected and all this, And you never hear anything about this, though, do you, Jeff, about the monetary
stuff? No, you don't. That's a good point. I actually think this is a bigger issue, and it's more of a stealth issue because it isn't really reported all that much, and it can have consequences. This is not consequence-free what they're doing if this trend were to continue or pick up steam. And it's not just Russia, by the way. Turkey sold half of their U.S. Treasury holdings just since last November. Norway sold 40% of their U.S. Treasury holdings since September. In the same month, Russia dumped half of their holdings. Japan sold holdings. China sold. Ireland sold. The UK sold. Switzerland sold. All of these countries are selling U.S. debt. Now, in the big picture, if you look at a chart of total holdings, you know, they're not all that significant, in total. But it is significant what Russia and Turkey and Norway are doing. And again, it can have consequences if this trend continues, or especially if it picks up steam.
I'd like to ask you what you think some of the motives are, aside from the fact that treasuries are still ridiculously underpriced, undervalued. That is, they're overvalued. The rates they're paying are way below, I think everybody would agree, way below where the normal equilibrium rate would be if you could decide such a thing in a world in which endless amounts of money can be created endlessly. But aside from unattractive interest rates, what might be some of the motives? Because as I look over, I mean, we can talk about Russia, but some of these other countries, Japan, Ireland, UK, Switzerland, very friendly to us. Turkey might be another story. Seems to be growing hostility towards the United States for reasons we could perhaps talk about. Norway, I would think, is a friend of the U.S., so it doesn't seem as though it's geopolitical reasons entirely, at least with most of these countries. What do you think is going on? Well, let's focus on Russia, perhaps, since that's the topic.
Well, with Russia, in their particular situation, it could be retaliatory. It could be, they're trying to counter the U.S. sanctions. They may be trying to punish us because of that. Maybe they may be dumping because of that. And it has been going on since 2011. Mm-hmm. That's probably part of it, but I don't think that's all of it. It could be partly financial need. It could even be a dress rehearsal in concert with China to see how the U.S. markets would react to a sale of treasuries. But I think the point here is that the motivation behind it doesn't really matter because the effects are the same. The fallout of this would be just the same whether or not, motivation is retaliatory or not. And I think that's worth talking about. We should probably talk about that. Because,
yeah, absolutely. You know, let's talk about the repercussions. The United States is running with under Trump. I think David Stockman was talking about it on this show some time ago, about $1.2 trillion. At the same time, the Fed is pulling back something like $600 billion out of the market to try to downside its balance sheet. So at a time when more than ever the U.S. needs the friendliness of foreigners, these countries seem to be pulling away. So let's talk about some of the repercussions, if you would.
Well, if this treasury selling trend, if you want to call it that, if that continues from the international community, there would definitely be consequences. First of all, interest rates would have to rise, just simply to make the treasuries more attractive. And by the way, this is a good point that I think some of your audience may be aware of, but most people in the mainstream don't know. The Fed does not control interest rates.
Right.
That's a controversial statement, perhaps. They set interest rates, but ultimately they don't control them. And that's because if something happens to where inflation rises or you begin to print money and devalue the dollar, which of course is the linchpin of a U.S. bond, or there's concern of default, or other countries are selling treasuries, and so therefore you've got to get out too because they're losing value. Any of these factors can force the Fed to raise rates beyond what they may want to otherwise do, simply because they have to make it more attractive for countries to buy our debt. And it's a serious issue because the amount of debt that we're trying to sell is at the highest level in U.S. history. We sold more debt in Q1 of this year than ever before in the history of America. And it's only going to keep going higher. There's very few analysts I can find out there that say, oh, yeah, but our debt's going to go down. No, our debt's going to go up. So they have to not only keep making it attractive, they have to make it attractive enough to sell even more debt than what they've been doing. So the first consequence is that interest rates could be forced up regardless of what the Fed may want to do. The U.S. dollar, the value of the U.S. dollar on the international marketplace would fall. Inflation would rise. The U.S. could default. That's unlikely, but because I think they would return to money printing before they would actually default on a payment. But money printing, again, if they did another round of QE or something or were forced to do that, that would lower the value of the bond because it's based on a U.S. dollar. So they would have to raise rates to make it more attractive because the dollar's worth less, the bond is worth less. So all of these things would impact not just U.S. citizens and everyone who uses the U.S. dollar, but it would affect all investors, and it would affect gold investors as well. You know, the theme of your show, Turning Hard Times into Good Times, this would be a hard time. If inflation rises or the dollar falls or the bond market goes, those are going to be hard times. There's no way around that, but you can turn it into a good time by owning gold because there's only one direction the gold price would go if something like this really played out, and that's higher.
Well, I certainly don't know about turning it into good times. That's the idea, of course. My idea is that at least you'll feel less pain if you own gold, most likely. Financially, at least, you'll feel less pain than if you don't own it. I would suppose that you and Michael agree that silver also will be a good asset to own.
Oh, absolutely. That's more affordable to the masses, so I think there actually will be a bigger rush into silver than there will be to gold. And silver has its own dynamics that are going on. It's such a small market and getting smaller all the time that it will be more volatile than gold, which means it will go higher, like it has many times in the past, than mm-hmm. gold will in the next, whether it's a bull market or some type of crisis environment where people literally rush into gold and silver. I think silver will easily outperform gold.
Jeff, we've had interest rates on the rise. Do you believe that? So what you're suggesting is this is really a function of the markets, that the Fed might want everybody to believe that it's in charge, that it controls things, but in fact, some of these things you're talking about right now, these other countries pulling away from treasuries, might be forcing the Fed not to pump money into the system as rapidly as the other otherwise might like to, or they want to downsize their balance sheet and pretend they can get back to some sort of normal environment after all the quantitative easings and so forth. But rates have been rising, so you would suggest that they're rising. That's a function of the market, not the Fed, right?
Well, I'm not saying it's not necessarily a function of the Fed right now. What I'm saying is a scenario exists that is a very real possibility of where, regardless of what the Fed may want to do, the market may demand higher interest rates, especially if we see inflation pick up, especially if they print money again. These are big outcomes, big scenarios. But the risk of them happening is going higher all the time. And there's no way to just turn the ship around. We have to sell our debt, A, and B, the amount of debt we need to sell is getting higher and higher every quarter. It's just mind-blowing to me how much debt we have to sell. So what I'm suggesting is that this is a trend to watch, not just what Russia is doing, but what other countries are doing as well. Because, mm-hmm. oh boy, it could be an ugly world if we can't sell our treasuries and are forced to raise rates to make them more attractive for them to be sold. And that's something that could happen very quickly. Just like the surprise with what Russia did in April, we could see something like that take off very quickly. So, for me, I feel much better off financially by owning physical gold and silver than I do by, buying bonds or something like that.
Well, most certainly. With a little bit of time we have left here, Jeff, we're looking at Russia building up its gold reserves. China has been building up its gold reserves. As you say, they're a little bit coy, China and Russia both, perhaps about exactly how much they own. A lot of people that I talk to believe that China owns an awful lot more gold than they're pretending they own. And then we have this Shanghai Petroleum Futures Exchange and the Shanghai Gold Futures Exchange. Do you see China, Russia, Iran, some of these countries that are not the closest friends of the United States, shoring up their own gold reserves in part as a defensive move and as a move to perhaps become less dependent on the dollar and trying to set up their own financial system to a great extent so they don't have to be cry uncle to the United States all the time?
Yes. The point with that is that the mechanism is now in place. That program is set up, it's in place, and it can be used at any time. So they're not using it a whole lot yet, but it's already set up. And so they can turn to it any time they want. And I actually wrote about that, I think it was late last year or early this year when that news first came out, and did some projections on, how much conversion they might make from oil to gold. And, in virtually any scenario, there's just not enough gold supply to go around if these countries decide they want to convert some of those reserves to gold. So there's another factor that we could spend a lot of time talking about. But the point there is that if they do feel like they want to get out of the dollar and they make a concerted effort to do so, regardless of the reason, that could impact the dollar very heavily and also, of course, be good for gold simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that in September is when the first petroleum futures exchanges expire. So some people are saying keep an eye on that date. Could be very interesting. We'll see.
Interesting. And September is obviously, as many people know, the best performing month of the year for gold.
So for gold, right.
We could see some fireworks that month. It'd be very. That's only a month and a half away. So
yeah, exactly. No, it's hard to say. Well. with just a minute and a half or so, about a minute left here, the tariffs, I think, my thinking is that the tariffs could actually also reduce the appeal of the dollar. And as former Secretary of State Kerry warned, that if the Iranian nuclear deal were trashed, that would also prompt a lot of European countries perhaps to become less enamored by the dollar. Any thoughts on those two ideas? With about a minute left, about 30 seconds left, actually.
Yeah. I think either those things could play out. I don't put a lot of stock into what a politician, you know, says publicly.
Yeah,
they have their
course.
Own motives and self-interest and that sort of thing. But I think the U.S. dollar clearly is at risk and is not, going to be able to sustain itself over a long period of time. I think the issue is, do you want to denominate some of your savings in a physical hard asset, or do you want to denominate it in a fiat currency that is losing and seeping value now and is likely to lose a lot of value in the future?
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that, Jeff. Thank you so much for your insights. Very, very interesting. Folks, go to goldsilver.com to catch up with Jeff and his frequent missives there. Thank you so much, Jeff, and we'll hope to do it again sometime.
Well, yep,
folks,
Jay,
okay, excellent. Well, folks, that is all the time we have. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Keith Weiner. He'll be with me to talk about the state of Nevada passing legislation to begin issuing gold-backed bonds. And I'm also hoping to have David Jensen on with me to talk about Trump's policies, which he thinks are not as ridiculous as they might seem, given the ideas and the people that voted for him. So it should be very interesting. Michael Oliver should be with me again as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Bonterra Resources, an advanced exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. Over the last 12 months, Bonterra has raised over $60 million and has attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based Vanek Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource in the second half of 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000 meters of drilling, where the dimensions of the Gladiator deposit have been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under the symbol BONXF.
Often referred to as one of the best teams in junior gold exploration, having discovered a 5 million ounce gold mine and sold a second company amidst discovery, the management behind Orin Resources now has a world-class exploration portfolio within Canada and Peru. Projects that give the company one of the largest direct pipelines for major discoveries globally, with one of the deepest technical teams to explore them. Entering into its third year of aggressive pursuit, Orin is expecting results from two of their major projects throughout the rest of this year. For the latest, head to orinresources.com and subscribe.